keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio, once again with your host Nick Burnaby here on UCY.TV. Make sure you guys bookmark UCY and come back and visit every day whenever you have a chance. Listen to it in your car, you can listen on your phone, plug it into the auxiliary cord and all that good stuff. Make sure you guys check out the antimedia.org, it's up and running really well. The new server thankfully is really efficient and it's running really smooth even with high traffic, so that's pretty cool. And I'm joined by my co-host DB. How's it going, man?
I'm doing good, man. I'm just watching some of this the world events going on right now, and you know, there's three that stick out to me. You know, Snowden's South by Southwest revelations were pretty bite-sized. They were an hour of anybody that's unfamiliar with what's going on with mass surveillance of all electronic, basically, communication, because it all originates and goes through the U.S., although that's going to be temporarily now with these revelations. But they're mass surveilling, and they literally don't have the computing power to break through all these massive, massive qubits of of data. Even with quantum computing, they can't stop, or supposedly can't stop, terrorist acts from happening. So this massive dragnet is not working. They need to go back to human intelligence. This electronic surveillance it has too many holes in it. It's too easy to get around it. And all it's really doing is detecting dissent. That's really all it's there for. It's not for security. It can't catch individuals because they're already above this basic tech these guys are using, even though they think it's so great.
Yeah, man, it's like anyone that was really trying to do something wouldn't be dumb enough to use these kind of channels.
Exactly.
And even if they did, with this whole Boston bombing thing, these guys were openly talking about this stuff on YouTube, and they were even warned about these guys, and they still let them get through. So it's like none of this stuff is working. We shouldn't be even doing it. And it's turned into just, like you said, a dragnet against dissent to find out who's a dissenter and who's not.
And that's and what are you going to do when you find out who is? I mean you can't kill ideas when they start. You can, I guess you can try with all kinds of new technologies these guys have been pioneering basically since the end of World War II. But if they were so successful and they were so effective, then they'd be working, and they're not. They're just not working. These guys are playing an end game. They're just delaying their own end game. If anybody's within these apparatuses, these very corrupt to the core apparatuses of security, of economy, of everything else, I mean, the game is up. There's too many people that know what's going on. You cannot silence, disappear, or control enough. And if anybody within these apparatuses is smart, they're going to turncoat, and they're going to fight for the people. Even if it is a little too late for them, trust me, we'll remember.
Yeah, man. like Snowden was saying in his the stuff he was talking about at the South by Southwest thing, we got to build around these because we can't really count on the government. We can't say, hey, we want you to roll this stuff back, and they're just going to roll it back. That's not really what's going to happen. And judging by the way Edward Snowden was talking, you can kind of tell that's kind of what I got that he was hinting at, is that we got to just keep improving our side of it, our technology, and keep building around this stuff. You know, make ourselves immune to all this spying, or so where it consumes so many resources for them to try to spy on you that it's just not worth it.
Right. And the thing is that it's killing, and I mean just absolutely gutting our economy, our real economy. We don't have a service economy anymore. We don't have a blue-collar economy. We have a white-collar. We have an innovation. We have a technology economy, and a lot of that is virtual. And when nobody trusts our networks and our servers and our infrastructure because they're always constantly being pried at by – not only the NSA, but really when you think about it, any Fortune 50 company, because they're all in bed together and they're all cross-sharing information. Well, honestly, you see that these 50 companies are a monopoly. There's a massive web that prevents any real innovation, stimulation, or competition, so it keeps the economy artificially slowed down. And then they let in basically anybody who wants to come in and give them free everything, and there you have a recipe for a first world country falling into the third world.
Yeah, it's the other guy that was interviewing Snowden. I forget his name, but he was saying, look, there's going to be a market that's going to spring up for these companies that are going to be. He's like, we got to start building companies that are, you know, outright protecting everybody's data. And make it part of your mission statement, basically to protect privacy and stuff. And you know, the guy is basically saying, yeah, this is the kind of business in the future that's going to be thriving. You know, people are losing respect for these mega corporations like Google and Yahoo and all this stuff, Facebook.
What respect? Anybody that knows about computers doesn't use any of this stuff anyway already. They're using Linux. They're using all these different kinds of messenger systems. They're going around these megalithical corporations because they're just not that great anyway. The technology and the product itself isn't all that great. And like he was saying, if it's free, it's garbage. It's like anything else in life. You get what you pay for. So if you're not paying for a program, they're data mining you to hell. They're going to compile a list for whatever reason, benign or other words. And you got to realize that, you know, you got to basically start to unplug yourself. We always love to talk about unplugging ourselves from the physical world grid. And it's also going to come with a virtual world where we're going to use end around things. We're not even going to use their internet soon. We're going to use dishes, just like in Greece. You can trust on that because they're going to try to censor everything. And the people that know are going to get around it.
Yep. That's what we got to start doing, man, is just building and building. And I think I saw a stat the other day that said only 23% of the people trust the mainstream media. You know, so I think we've done a great job about informing people. Now, part of the informing process is we have to start building stuff, building platforms that work, building institutions that work with these new ideas, so that as we inform people, there's something that they can already seek out and become a part of, and they can see that it's working. You know, a lot of people, they're just like, they think that we're just talking out of our rear ends when we're talking about these ideas. But if we had something to show for it.
Oh, they're easy.
Exactly.
They're easy. I mean, we always say if you have 10 or 20 willing people that are just tired of it, they're just tired of the game and the rat race and being on a hamster wheel, even in this country where you will have property tax to contend with, so you're going to have to make some form of federal notes unless you buy the property in gold, which, you know, we always love to say that's the immodial title, right? That's like the mythical unicorn. But at any rate, you can do it. And even if a judge votes like in Florida that a woman has to plug back in, all that does is bring, you know, attention that this issue deserves, which is now with this lady being forced to be plugged back in, what do you think's happening? They still use there, dude. How are these idiots that run things supposedly in the federal government helping everybody and trying to wrap everybody into this grid, not understanding that they're just drawing attention to the very issues they want left in the dark? It's impossible with alternative media, basically at the same level of trust as the corporate media, to let anything through anymore, really.
Yeah, man. And you know, if everybody's already on this level, everyone's starting to realize, okay, well, yeah, the TV is the TV. They basically look at it like a tabloid nowadays, at least.
It is.
Most people that I know look at it like. And they want to see alternatives, but they also want to see alternatives to this information. Because right. if we're just pounding the grounds, talking about how bad everything is and how effed up things are, which is completely true – but it's just like you're just building up frustration if you're not giving people a way to like fight back or to take control of their own lives and stuff.
Well, it's only so bad because it's so convenient. And once it starts becoming less and less convenient, more and more people find themselves staring at some kind of a poverty situation. They'll say, how can I get out of this? Because if I work at a job where I make even $15 an hour, that's not that easy. To get by on that, you know, you don't ever have a luxury, and you're going to be scrimping and saving, and people are going to realize, you know, I need to start growing some food at my place. I need to start growing it indoors. Even I need to find a way to make some money, you know, completely bartering. These side things are starting to pop up already among my own friends that I never thought I'd hear them utter a word about any of this stuff. Go, hey, I went to the swap meet last week and traded a guy for something. And I'm like, think about how cool that is. You just didn't use a Federal Reserve note.
Yep, no tax, no trail.
No labor. Think about that.
No waste. There's no waste. You know, whenever you trade in a currency like that, when you do a direct trade, there's no waste at all.
Not at all. You get 100% value. It's a social contract between two parties. And that's going to more and more be the future as more and more people fall off grid. Maybe by their own design, but then really, what are they going to do? Just round everybody up? I mean, this isn't the 1940s or 30s, and they're not going to be able to easily do their little stupid plan they probably have cooked up. And there's going to be alternative communities, currencies, and everything you could think of. It's just a natural progression.
I'm dropping a couple links down in the chat here. One of them is 15 Ways to Survive in an Effed Up Economy. And it's really got some cool tips in there. And then there's a hyperlink in there about how to start a community currency. And I'm going to drop that link. I got that. I pulled the link out of the article, but I'm going to drop it in the chat room too, so that everybody can take a look at how to start a local currency, man. It's pretty cool. And I think it's a huge step, man, because if we're ever going to beat these guys, and it kind of goes back to kind of what Edward Snowden was saying earlier today. We're not going to be able to tell the government, hey, we want you to like shrink in size. The government's not going to shrink the government. You know what I mean? It's going to take us building around them and making them irrelevant for people to finally realize, okay, we actually don't need them and we could actually stop paying taxes. You know, and we have to come up with ways like bartering, creating our own currencies, local currencies, alternative currencies, digital cryptocurrencies, and all a mix of all this stuff, plus physical, you know, silver and gold and stuff like that. Have a competing currency and allow everyone to choose, you know. So,
well, I mean, that's what Bitcoin purports to do, but what we're going to find is that the major powers in the world, Russia, China, and the U.S., are going to basically obliterate it from a world stage, and it's going to become a true crypto underground currency among, well, maybe less than honorable individuals are going to basically start magneting towards that kind of a way to conduct business. It's going to be marginalized. They want that. And they're going to, since they control the internet and all the functions and capacities and server bases it goes through, they're going to marginalize that currency. Now, what does that spell for Bitcoin? Like I've been saying forever, like it's going to be easily manipulated because it depends on things that the people at the top control, which is basically the infrastructure. You know, the internet doesn't work if you don't have power and you don't have an internet connection. And it can be completely, you know, put behind an iron curtain as far as digitally. So it's just not that smart. We got to come up with something else that can be used anywhere, anytime, and maybe dropped off in different places. Like, you know how we always love to say with the brick walls, they have the flash drive drops, something like that in the future where we can all kind of trade anonymously, individually, and with currency we control with maybe just something like a labor unit. I have no idea how we'd manufacture that.
Well, I guess the whole key is that people are trying it and figuring it out.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure, like I was saying, is that we need some kind of mix of a bunch of different currencies in order to have something that's where you, it's easily hedged, you know, so you're not fully invested in just purely Bitcoin and then all of a sudden it's gone. Or all of a sudden it's like not worth anything. Yeah, everyone should have a mix of a bunch of different things. Some kind of physical stuff, assets, you know, bartering materials, you know, local currency, Bitcoin, you know, imagine, dude, you know, and food even. You could trade food, you can trade weed, you could trade beer, you could trade whiskey. I mean, you could trade anything.
There's different kinds of wealth if were the dollar to collapse. Like, for instance, I know our other host, LaVon, she has a bunch of just stuff. I know. I've been over. She has a lot of just random stuff. And I'm like, man, you guys have a gold mine back in this backyard, like of all kinds of different machines and tools and you name it. You know what I mean? So anything that you have that could have a use, that's got a value to it. And it may be put to the test, maybe put to the value system sooner than later. And it's good to just hold on to those things. And like we always say, you can go to swap meets with items and a lot of those guys will trade. If they've been sitting there all day and haven't really sold anything, they're going to be like stoked if you present something they want.
Yeah, man. We're starting up this local initiative down here in San Diego. At least we're going to try to, where we're going to start getting like helping homeless people, teach them how to like buy and sell stuff on the internet, like buy it from Craigslist and sell it at the swap meet, eBay, Amazon, all that stuff. But we're going to try to start getting donations, you know, from people, furniture and whatever, appliances, just random stuff, clothes, that we can have these guys teach them how to sell it online, you know, and then it'll help give these homeless guys a job and give them some skills. And basically we'll be able to teach them all the skills they need to where all they need is basically a smartphone and they'll be able to make a living for themselves, you know?
Yep. It's possible. I mean, if you're just willing to get good enough at something, whatever it may be, you can create your own cottage industry in and of itself online. You can be an economy unto yourself. I know there's plenty of entrepreneurs that are making, you know, it's a humble 25 to 30, maybe 40 or 50,000 a year job, but you're your own boss and you work when you want and you do what you want. And that kind of freedom is really, it's what makes life kind of enjoyable when you can kind of do what you want when you want and still have enough to get by, you know?
Yeah. And now the other thing is that, like I was saying earlier, we need to start building these models that where we can help people, you know, because if we don't have a model to replace what the government's supposed to be doing by, you know, taking care of the poor people with welfare and all this stuff, if we don't have working models in place that are actually fixing the problem instead of just putting a Band-Aid over it like they do now, then no one's ever going to believe what we're saying. You know, so we have to start building these things and start experimenting with what it is that we can do to build institutions that take care of people outside of, you know, above and beyond what the government is quote unquote supposed to do, you know, and then people will finally start to realize that maybe these ideas work. Now, I guess the thing is we have to try these things out before we know they work themselves. But I think we're going to start doing this thing like next month sometime here in San Diego, hopefully. And it's just going to be like a place for these guys to come in, make a living, clean up, you know, be able to take a shower, learn some new skills, man. We're going to try to get them, you know, education and some kind of free medical, you know, work and things like that. So it's a start, and hopefully it takes off. And hopefully it takes off, and then people start replicating it, and it starts growing, and then we're able to expand it, you know, and then we could actually provide some kind of alternative to what it is that we have going on now, which is a total welfare state.
Right, and what it's spurring is also this community rebuilding that we've always been talking about, and it's starting at a small level, local level. I know for myself, for instance, and my close group, you know, close-knit group of friends, we'll find ways for each other to hook each other up, help each other out, and it's just going to only continue to grow as the economy contracts and contracts, because this slow growth we're seeing, this 1 or 2% growth rate we're seeing, which is lower than inflation, by the way, which of course spells doom eventually for this economic model, but in the meanwhile, while the reserves, so to speak, are being burned through, and they're being shipped to China on big giant tanker, ocean tankers, what we need to do is learned it by with less actual cash and derive more wealth from basically cottage industry. I can never think of another way you can really make money except make it from home and use your own home to do stuff. Like, I know for a place, for instance, I'm looking at going, we're going to look at maybe like doing an aquaponic indoor setup and all kinds of setups where we can get free food. And those things will add up at the end of the year, $1,000 here, $1,000 there saved. And it can really tide you over.
Well, it's like, it's kind of like, look, either we start sharing with our friends and family and with our neighborhoods and with our communities, or what's happening now is where you're forced to share, but down the barrel of a gun with the government, and then the government decides what they're going to do with it.
Right.
Which I think the first option sounds a lot better. You know, where you get to choose what you get to help the people that you want to help, you know, because the government may take your money and use it for things you don't want to do, like building up quote unquote democracy in Iraq. I didn't want my tax money doing that, but the government, I don't get a choice because the government takes my money and then decides what they're going to do with it.
Right. I mean, it's just, it comes down to this. The more people in need, give more power to a strong and even overbearing central government that, you know, runs under the auspices of being a democracy and being this constitutional republic and skirting around it with all these loopholes and a legal system that's bought and paid for. So when you live in that kind of system with the biggest, most powerful, badass military ever, what do? You have to change it from the inside. You have to start, you know, strengthening people so that when they lose their job, it's not a big deal. They can still eat. We got to repeal property tax. At the very least, when you own a home, you got a roof over your head forever. And you never got to worry about being homeless. If you've worked your butt off and own that home, you should never have to pay another dime on it. I think that we should make something where if there's a zero balance on that mortgage, there's no more property tax. There's so many things we could do to strengthen individual communities and rights to the point where the federal government wouldn't really have much authority. They'd still have a use. Their central administrative authority is just ridiculous. Why? For what purpose? Why should I listen to a guy on the other coast who's basically a different country? I mean, if you've ever been to the East Coast and the West Coast, you know we're very different. So it's just silly to me that there's this all-powerful central government that's swooping more and more power and rights from the states, and we got to start taking that back because that's what made our country great in the first place. We had a bunch of mini kingdoms and this massive military where no one could mess with us.
It's just that it's like impossible to see these people in real life. You never really get to meet them. And then they tell you what to do and you're just supposed to, you know, you're just supposed to do it. You're just supposed to do what they say. And everyone's supposed to just get along happily, even though the working class has been completely bankrupted by this thing, by this monster. Countries have been destroyed. I mean, our own infrastructure is crumbling now.
Well, look at Ukraine. Ukraine's an example of what is known as economic hitman going in there and basically, you know, staving off part of the West, inciting a bunch of dissent in the West, because of course maybe they want to be in the EU, but you know, what are you going to subdivide a country into thirds and have this super weak middle Ukraine, this Crimea that rips off basically where the pipelines originate from, the oil fields. Now Russia gets those. They get to keep their Black Sea port. You know, no one dares threaten them, and they have total control of that area through just sheer military might. And that's what we get. That's what happens.
Yeah, and I saw a graphic today about showed Ukraine and all the pipelines that go through there. I mean, apparently Ukraine is basically a choke point for all the oil flowing westward. Everything, all this oil and stuff coming through Europe, it all goes through the Ukrainian territory. And basically, if they wanted to, Ukraine could completely basically shut off most of the gas to Europe. I mean, they still have a northern pipeline that goes up through the, you know, Scandinavia from Russia. I think it goes through Finland or whatever. But that only supplies like 30% of the gas for Europe. A large majority of it ends up going through Ukraine.
So, well, here's the thing. It's going to unleash this rash of sanction action. It's going to become, you know, the proxy war has been averted. Why? Because, like I love to say, even though these guys at the top are they're cold-blooded, they're still human and have families and some kind of feelings, and they don't want to start some nuclear exchange with Russia. So the proxy war was averted. Ukraine will be subdivided. You know, we'll have a new Berlin Wall, in a sense, a cultural wall, where the East is going to go over to them, to Crimea. We'll get some portion of the West going into the EU and branching off into Western Ukraine or some other breakaway province. And what instead will happen is now begins the saber-rattling sanction wars, because, you know, we threatened to sanction Russia. Russia threatened to sanction American and European companies, and they're basically doing a brisk business in Russia. So you can't hurt one without the other. It's like they were always saying, political theorists said, eventually the world would get to a point where there would be two or three super states which cannot defeat each other but can defeat everybody else, and it becomes a stalemate forever with endless perpetual proxy wars, and that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, my buddy was over today, and we were actually talking about this thing that we're doing, this project we're doing to help the homeless, and it's also going to be like a space for activists to work, and we're gonna have the anti-media office there, and then I mean, we can probably do the radio show from there as well as the TV show that we're trying to do, not a TV show, but like a internet news show.
Webcasts,
that we're trying to do for
episodes.
Yeah, basically for San Diego, we're trying to do it, and then eventually we're going to try to put together a big, you know, nationwide effort, global effort to try to build up some kind of nationwide internet TV channel, like a 24/7 news channel, but based on the internet and not corporate, non-corporate bias stuff. You know what I mean?
It's a live stream without all the cutesy, you know, cat channels and cameras of like bathrooms and in other countries, like, you know what I mean? It'll be like a live stream that actually is all just people going out, finding out stuff that the media wouldn't dare report. How will we do it? Because, well, people are passionate about the truth, even if they're not getting paid $1 million a year like these actors, I mean, anchors are.
Yeah, I mean, they're totally just TV anchors at this point. I mean, not even TV anchors, TV actors.
That's
the anchors have become actors, man. They just read a script, and then, I mean, in my opinion, and I've seen Wolf Blitzer say this all the time, where he actually says, in my opinion, I think this. It's like, actually, no, that's not really your opinion. That's what they told you to say. You know, it's like they told you to say my opinion, then they gave you an opinion to have.
Right. Well, you know, we've always said that the corporate media, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and we can lump in all the little tiny parent satellite companies that they all own, basically anything on the regular TV, they're all corporately owned. I mean, what did Abby Martin say recently? That, yeah, RT is Kremlin backed, but you know what? Is there any proof of coercion? Are we selling products online? Are we selling Russian products? Yeah, of course it's an arm of propaganda again, but it's under no, you know, delusions of that. We understand what it is. Whereas people that watch the news in America honestly think it's independent. I mean, that is just asinine to me. They're just another propaganda arm, and people, if they would realize that, would just look at it for what it is. It's a tabloid at this point. It's acting. It's no different than watching Maury Povich. It's just that instead of entertaining you, they want to scare you and basically direct you in a certain lines of thinking.
Yeah, exactly. And they want to keep everybody scared. They want to keep everyone in the frenzy. They want to keep everyone on the verge, you know, so no one wants to do anything other than their regular routine, which they're pretty much forced to do, which is, you know, get up in the at 6 a.m., drive to work, you know, come home and deal with a little bit of time you got,
right.
Which unfortunately for a lot of people in this country, it's spending time on TV, watching CNN and Anderson Cooper, this, that, and the other thing, watching Fox News. And unfortunately, those people are
voting.
A lot of people are, yeah, and they're the ones that are voting too.
Well, that's the thing, is that the people at the top know that this paradigm coming is, it's already hit. It's the people, nobody votes anymore anyway, and the people that do vote are basically dropping out. I mean, they're either, you know, expiring, or they're basically losing all political interest because they realize that it's just a completely false system. It doesn't matter which side you vote for, they're both bad. And we need to have a third party like Free and Equal, and probably a fourth and a fifth, and as many as we need, and as many representatives as we need that is equitable for our interests as individual communities. That's what we need, is more representatives per city, per community, so that it becomes this convoluted mess of government and they can't ever get through anything harmful on a national scale like an NDAA 14 or even this stupid TPP Global Monsanto Protection Act that's going to ruin the entire world's food supply. So, yeah, it needs to be scaled up for us, by us, at an individual level, at a state level, and then it becomes a moot point because we'll make the cogs basically drip with so much oil they can't even move anymore, and we'll do what we want on an individual level.
I saw a stat this morning on MSNBC, and it showed that 50% of millennials are independents. They don't affiliate with Republican or Democrat.
Why now, would you?
Now, the funny thing is, considering that this was on MSNBC, they chose to highlight the fact that like 20% of millennials affiliated Democrat and only 9% right. affiliated Republican or something
right,
like that.
Right. Well, Republicans are the worst of the two because, you know, of course, unless you're rich, they really stand for nothing except maybe, I guess, less government in theory. In theory. But that's never the case. It's just more big business and less big government, as opposed to more big government and less big business. But
well,
they need to be broken up both. They're both monopolies.
Socially, yeah. The Republicans want less government. But when it comes to foreign policy, they want to explode that thing. And then if you ask me, I think social policy, like I don't believe in the welfare state or anything. But if you're going to have some kind of policy – you should be helping the people first and not the military-industrial complex.
Well, people at the level need to tell them, hey, you know what? This is what we need, and start basically siphoning off from the tax base themselves. How much money does San Diego have every year to work with? Billions and billions, right? And we need to appropriate those funds, not let these guys just direct it wherever they want. Be like, hey, I want a piece of that for this. I want a piece of that. If we keep grouping up all these civilian groups and getting things together and saying, hey, I want a new park. I want a new community center. I want a new hospital. I want this and this. And everybody's crying for the money and chirping for it. What are they going to do? Not give it to them? They'll be gone the next – not even the voting cycle. They'll just be recalled right away. It's got to get to that point. That's where we – the money is the power. So we got to take the money back. When we give it to the local government and they try to siphon it up to the Fed – be like, no. We have plans for all that stuff. You know, you can't pork barrel everything for federal projects.
Yeah, or for nation building somewhere in the Middle East.
Well, what is it doing? Yeah, exactly. Well, how does that benefit me and you when our own infrastructure is crumbling? We had a 6.9 on the Richter scale earthquake in Northern California. Do you think any federal funds are being directed that way to make sure all the infrastructure's sound and there's teams of Army Engineer Corps out there checking everything to make sure a bridge doesn't fall? Nope. I mean, that's what I'm saying, is we're directing the money outward, siphoning all the resources outward. Does anybody get it here?
Only the extremely rich, unfortunately.
Exactly. They're putting it offshore.
That's how pyramid schemes work,
right?
Unfortunately.
Right.
Now the thing about that earthquake, man, it's kind of scary because it hit off the coast too, which is it kind of hit right in a place where it could potentially create a big tsunami, you know, and that's something. And we saw these eels washing up on shore. What was it? It was like 6 months ago or so, and it's kind of known that these eels, when they wash up on shore, that it's kind of a sign that there's going to be earthquakes in the area soon. And these eels are washing up in like Central California. You know,
right.
So that's something we need to keep an eye on. And anyone living near the coast, make sure you guys have some kind of plan to evac if there is a tsunami warning, or if you live by the coast and there's an earthquake, you'd be smart just to get the high ground either way, whether or not there's an earthquake or a tsunami warning. Chances are, if there is a tsunami, that something will go wrong with the alert system, so you should be ready to go either way.
Yeah, and you know, I always wonder now, because I know that weather's a weapon, and so are earthquakes. If any of these things are just nudges, like did Russia nudge us? You know what I mean? Like, hey, back off. Like, we got our Crimea. Like, we took it. We cooed him. We got it. And if you fuck around, we're going to just, you know, something might happen.
Well, I saw this report. But the thing is it was from this Turner Radio Network website, which isn't really even a radio network. And it's kind of a sketchy source. Then again, they were the first ones I saw the story about the radiated, about the sailors being having radiation, the Navy guys. And, right. And it turned out to be true. But these guys were saying basically that there was an earthquake in Crimea as soon as the Russians started moving troops into the area. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's something that I saw.
I mean, it's not surprising. The, at this point, they got it down. It's pretty easy for them to direct that stuff. You know, what I found interesting was that I've been reading a lot of, you know, alternative sites, and they say Crimea now has what the oldest pyramid ever, and it was buried, and they found it, and that's what started this whole thing, is that the West wants that, and Russia wants that. I guess all of these massive, massive pyramid structures are immense sources of power on an invisible grid Tesla talked about. And the more you have controlled and can direct the energy they derive from the Earth's basically magnetic core, which is an endless, endless power machine, an electromagnetic power machine, well, the more you have, the more you can control, the more of this insanely powerful invisible energy field you can control. And they lay upon these ley lines, like if people do research, they can find out. You know, there's holy sites around the world where there's these conduits, and it's real energy. It can be harnessed and used, and it's endless, and it's very, very powerful.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, the way that an electric generator works, it's like a coil system, and these coils spin around, and they go around each other, and that's what creates electricity. The Earth is basically a gigantic, gigantic coil. Inside, right. Like the lava, it flows against it. There's different flows of this lava.
The lava's
spinning around. Yeah. And there's all these, you know, there's all these irons and stuff inside the Earth that's spinning around, going around each other. Obviously, it's creating some kind of an extreme amount of energy, because look at all the heat down there. Look at all the heat. It keeps right. It's so hot that the rocks are molten.
They are. And it's, you know, everybody who's watched the science fiction movie The Core, there's a lot of useful scientific theory that now seems to be, at least from a power perspective, fact that it's this endless perpetual ocean of molten iron and electromagnetic storms going off, and it's just, it's massive power down there.
It's just like a gigantic, gigantic electrical coil.
It's a giant semiconductor is what I wanted to say. It really is. And it goes out at certain points, and whoever controls more of these points controls more of this power. It's this Tesla power. This power is absolutely staggering. It controls an underground world people could only dream of, with maglev trains and gigantic underground cities. And it's all documented, and it's all been paid for with, you know, money from all kinds of different sources and hidden in plain view. And it's there for the elites when things go sour on the surface. That's what it's there for, and that's what it's used for.
Hey, I just want to remind you guys, we have open lines tonight. If you guys want to call us and talk about something, if anything you guys want to talk about, give us a call. It's 718-717-8296. Once again, it's 718-717-8296. And we could talk about whatever, if there's something we're not covering or anything you guys want to talk about, whatever you guys want, man. Just give us a call and we can talk about it. So, I wanted to ask you about what you thought about this plane thing, this whole plane missing thing.
It's a good segue into that, because just digging up some cursory information and going from the semiconductor that is the Earth to Freescale Semiconductor, which apparently was targeted as a company and basically disintegrated on this plane, is what it appears to have happened. It's a cutting edge energy efficiency company based in Austin. You're talking about a company that was at the forefront of moving from a post-oil, post-coal world. And that cannot be allowed, correct? Especially when a plane from Kuala Lumpur is going to Beijing. So why was the plane hit with something that made it disappear, like, an energy weapon? to make guys go away that had vital, vital information on super energy efficient stuff, and it was going to the enemy because they are, just as Russia is, it's all a big game between the three giant super states, and it was just taken out. And that's the prevailing theory to everybody that seems to dig into it a little bit. It was this particular company. There's a couple other guys on the plane. There's an IBM exec that was kind of a big guy, and IBM is getting ready to unveil a new energy efficient, super strong solar panel collector. I think we talked about it last time, where it constricts a super beam into one turbine and just spins it at a ridiculous level and makes a retarded amount of power.
Yeah, it amplifies the right. sunlight by like 2,000 times or something like that.
So if something similar or a competing kind of tech was going to the east, well, that couldn't be allowed, right? So hey, this is all theories. These are all theories. They're conspiracy theories, but they make sense because anybody who knows about the world's read Confessions of an Economic Hitman and knows how things really work. We're not naive.
Hey, we had a caller on the line. You there?
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Pretty good. Good.
I'm sorry if I sound a little foolish, but I'm fighting nose congestion again. But no worries, I'll get over it. Like, anyways, I just wanna before getting into the plane thing, I wanna go back on the subject of property tax. I know it's very crippling for people who are very economically disadvantaged, but I also want to talk about the collateral damage if it's taken away. That unfortunately, it's the primary source where schools get their funding. And with that taken out of the picture, what would be the backup plan? Just saying.
Right. To pay. So that's always the problem: is how do we pay for roads and schools? When the property tax pays for that, and we're going to have to divert things. If we have a budget of, I don't know how many, $700 billion on paper we spend on the military, well, unfortunately, to secure our rights as people, let alone Americans, but just natural rights to have a roof over our head if we've earned it with our own labors under current market conditions, society at large has to understand and make the change going, we can cut a defense budget in half and still be more than any other country in the world by twice. And then we can eliminate the need for these property taxes and secure people in the fruits of their labor. So they have a roof over their head forever, no matter what. It's something where we have to direct funding from one to another and convince people. Why would you always want to pay tax? Who signed off on that? Who's okay with that? Nobody. Nobody I know is like okay with that. So we just got to derive it from a different source and move money around.
Well, I think this is a really good question, man. And I think what would be awesome is kind of if people were able to fund the schools kind of the way we pay our electricity bills, you know, where you just go down to the school that's in your area and you just cut them a check every once a month. You give them $100 or you give them $50 and you say, all right, this is to help the school. You know, and like we were saying at the very beginning is that we got to build up these new ways of doing things, these new institutions, in order for us to make the government irrelevant. And of course, this is a great point, is if we don't come up with a way to help the schools and get all the people that can't afford to pay for school to get free schooling, we got to figure that out. We got to do that on our own if we're going to get it out of the hands of the government.
Definitely, especially because, as you can obviously tell, that's at least on the city of San Diego alone is having trouble with educational level. That pretty much that's what the big rise of charter schools, which are basically like neoliberal economic indoctrination, which would pretty much, and besides the fact that it's privatizing education, so pretty much we got to watch out for that.
It's not only privatizing it, but it's centralizing it into this one doctrine that's being pushed to all school children nationwide. So they're all getting an identical education, and it's really not one. It's an indoctrination. So what would happen if we eliminated funding to schools from property tax? Well, I'd guess that Ron Paul's wet dream of the Department of Education going bankrupt would happen. It would force the free market to come up with academies of sorts And people could find the best deal and the best curriculum for their child based on their individual talents. Wouldn't that be freaking amazing?
Oh, definitely. But also, going back previously, that the pretty much what Nick was saying, that pretty much that in with the property tax would get eliminated, you have to donate like $100, $50, or whatever you could, like, or instead of everybody paying, I don't know what's the deal on property tax, because I live in a government subsidized apartment complex, but basically, like, if the pretty much just to find out what the property tax would be made instead of what they're able to pay, pretty much at the more you earn, the more you pay, pretty much, like, so pretty much at least who are most economically disadvantaged will not have to tighten their belts so much.
Right, and right now what it is just 1% of the of the adjusted property value. So somebody will go out and estimate it, and they'll come up with some number, and then you pay 1%, and that's what you pay every year.
And also speaking back on the what also I get a little brain stuck sometimes that like this example that pretty much former TNA wrestler AJ Styles, when he was growing up, that his father, I think it was he's a veteran from the military, had like 5 hours lived in a trailer, and for some odd reason that pretty much that his family made so much money that they did not qualify for financial things, et cetera, but well, pretty much just considering the fact not just how much you make, but how much you need to spend to stay afloat.
Yeah, man, it's a huge problem, man, because obviously the government is neglecting the people that are in need, and now all these taxes and stuff like the property tax, all this stuff is regressive, because if you look at the percentage of your income that these people have to pay for their property tax, if you're poor, you're paying a lot more percentage of your income. You know, so in essence, this stuff is regressive, just like the justice system, just like almost every law, just like them when they make you get insurance with Obamacare. If you're really poor, guess what? Too bad. You're still going to have to buy it. And if you're extremely poor, then that's a large percentage of your income. If you're extremely rich, your insurance is only a very small portion of your income, 0.1% or something.
Obamacare is a – yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Saying what you will about pretty much what the private media has said about Fidel Castro, that he's the saint incarnate or whatever, but it's almost inexcusable that countries with such dire straits as Cuba healthcare coverage with no cost and a good quality education, and the so-called greatest country in the world cannot do that.
Right.
Exactly, man. Because
we always talk about that, because we're getting charged European tax rates with none of the real benefits. People always love to say there's the opportunity here. We have great roads, and there's safety and there's security, and we have good schools. And it's not true. We don't have good schools. We don't have good food. Our roads are subpar for the most part. If you look at it, the infrastructure is breaking down and it's ancient, and you know, Europe is modernizing rapidly, and we're doing it piecemeal because it's capitalism for all here, and we're still paying socialism tax. So we're getting shafted from both sides. Unless you're what we call the 1%, it sucks. And people should understand that they're living a worse life than many countries with less wealth than they are.
Undoubtedly.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And even in Cuba, even with their meager economy that's pretty extremely small, I mean, they're still able to regenerate some of that tax money into free education and stuff like that, because right, they're not spending billions and billions and billions and a huge percentage of their tax base on defense and on nation building, you know, because right, the fact is that we'd have plenty of money to pay for everyone to go to college for free, and to pay for everyone to go to school, and to pay for all the poor people to have food. But we're squandering it away. But we don't. We don't get to decide where our money gets spent, and unfortunately, a large majority of it gets spent on things that don't benefit us at all, and in fact, probably hurt us in the long run.
And I was just going to say, if people really took the time to understand how much money the United States controls and possesses and assets and the other liabilities of countries which we own. I mean, we literally own so many other countries from World War II still to this day. We own their banknotes for all their bonds, like Japan, like Germany. Even though they say we own Germany debt, we own them on a bond level. So it's ridiculous to think we can't even afford European style benefits while we're at war perpetually. We still could. The problem is that these corporate subsidies, $4 billion a year to oil. I mean, and that's probably smaller than it really is. If we cut off just corporate subsidies, we could pay for all the social programs and then some.
Well, I guess the thing is that we gotta pretty much not just get intellectually prepared to pretty much defend our viewpoints, because obviously the establishment will pretty much jackhammer us out the wall. So even with the fight for 15, that pretty much it's not that really much there yet, but they're getting ready. Pretty much that raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour will cripple or even kill small business. Once again, we gotta be intellectually prepared to pretty much combat those counterproductive viewpoints and ideas.
Yes, we do. And we have to have a different way to pay people instead of a fiat system, because it's not going to work. It's going to fall apart at one point. They're going to use it to try to push through some chaotic agenda, and we can't fall for it.
Yeah, man. I think the best thing we need to do with all these workers is, first thing, get them off the dollar. You know what they say about the minimum wage? I think it was back in the 70s or something, or maybe it was the 60s. But the minimum wage used to be 25 cents. But back in those days, the quarters were made out of silver. Now, right, that same quarter today is worth like something like $25 or something. So
historical value.
Yeah, if the wages would have kept up with the inflation, the minimum wage right now would be roughly about $25, you know, and that'd be a much healthier wage than what these guys are getting right now, which is like, I know in California it's like $8, but the federal minimum wage is even lower, you know, and there's just no way that people can live on that. But at the same time, as we keep going down this fiat system, the dollar just keeps getting worth less and less. And if you look at what happens to these people that are like on the retired people that are on Social Security, the increases for Social Security are very, very small. And if you look at the real inflation, if you account for the price of food, the price of fuel, the price of milk and stuff like that, I mean, the people on Social Security right now are getting shafted, because every year their money is worth less and less. Everything costs more and more, and their increase there's some years where they don't even increase the pay for these Social Security people. And it's well known that the inflation is at least 10%, the real inflation. So if your prices are – your costs are going up 10% a year, but your increase in payment is only going up 1%, 2%, then in the long run it's unsustainable, because then everybody at the end – towards the end of this thing, as we get closer and closer to the collapse, everybody that's on a fixed income, that's on either government subsidy or on Social Security, they're going to be screwed. They're not going to have enough to live.
And they're the weakest link, Nick, and they're the one being targeted, because – the older folks won't do anything. The poorest of the poor are going to probably start some kind of upheaval, and that's really what they want. They want that more than anything, because once they do it, they'll clamp down on everybody. That's what they want. They're getting ready for it. We all know that. We've known this for 2, 3, 4 years since the initial NDA 2011 was passed, where they said anybody at any time for any reason could be detained. We knew they were going to use it for that exact reason, because they expect certain demographics, certain communities to just light up, and they're getting ready for it, man. And then once they mop those guys up, they're going to clamp down on everybody.
Also, just as a brief example, pretty much, at the end of the day, pretty much historic proof of that, Martin Luther King, that pretty much it's better to fight with love than with war, like with the example of Ukraine, that pretty much that they were able to pretty much overthrow the president, but for what purpose? So the Russians could invade?
I mean, that's, right. Well, I mean, pick your poison. Do you want you know, coercion and backdoor cloak and dagger type of leadership, or do you want strongman, where I'm a dictator leadership? So pick your poison. Right. And it's more along cultural lines. Crimea is just basically Russia. They just wanted to be part of it again, and Russia swooped in and grabbed them. And it was just a coup d'etat. It was a takeover without a shot being fired, really, although I've heard that Russia's been working the Ukrainian forces, so I have no idea.
Well, I guess that we got to do a little more. Well, since everything is happening, obviously, very, very fast, we got to be able to not know what's going on, but look deep into the details. But also back to pretty much economic disparity, pretty much they'll blame people that pretty much at the poor are the biggest welfare queens around. And yet private prisons that pretty much get their 100% profits from the government. That pretty much that they're even threatening to sue state governments if the prisons are not at full capacity.
Yeah, I've heard that. And that's an insane contract, and if people knew about that, they would who knows what they do. Can you imagine that it's like having a quota for cops and having them have to hand out tickets. Even if there wasn't enough crime, they're under constant pressure to be handing these tickets out. It's just ridiculous.
Basically a mini version of the TPP, right? Because that's basically what the TPP is. There was an article on The Onion a while back during the Syrian crisis, which basically said that these military and remember, this is satire, but they were saying that the military contracting companies were going to sue the government because of lost profits that they would have got if we would have started up a war with Syria. Yeah, exactly. Now, under the TPP, that kind of thing wouldn't even be satire. That could actually be true. Because they'll preemptively sue you for ruining their profits. Who's to say that these military-industrial complex companies couldn't say, hey, you guys didn't go into that war like you should have. We're going to sue you for our lost billions.
And that's just more than crazy. I mean, don't people understand that there's guys right now that are suing to allow them to continue something that's going to murder millions of people? Are we all right with that? Are we that content with bread and circus that we allow that to persist in this country?
No, that at least at the local level, we gotta pressure our politicians to pretty much fight back one way or another. Although before we run out of time, I want to get to one final thing, the original issue at hand before I called in, that the missing Malaysian plane, that pretty much, I tweeted to the Young Turks earlier, that pretty much I want to make another challenge to the NSA, that pretty much that the main purpose is pretty much watch out so that terrorists don't do attacks on America. If they're all spying in on us, and pretty much Jane Jugo reported earlier today that the family members who have been trying to call the passengers, that the cell phones are still working. They're still working, although they
really
don't answer. Yeah, that pretty much I tweeted earlier to Jane Jugo and the Young Turks. Pretty much, I right now challenge the NSA to get off their lazy ass and start working to find those missing Malaysian, those missing people on that Malaysian plane, if they can track down their location on GPS.
Oh yeah, and that's the thing, man, is that obviously they could if they wanted to, which tells me that it's all kind of plays into this bread and circus game where it's kind of one of these things, I think, where they're like, hey, look at this plane thing, and let's not worry about what's happening in Ukraine right now.
Yeah, well, since I guess I'll leave you two alone pretty much to make that final thought. My name's Alberto, and you can find me on Twitter at 314 Love Machine, nothing XXX, but I just love to do random rants, plug things around. And speaking about plugging, that pretty much 12 San Diegans hearing this, that pretty much to join us on Wednesday at noon at the Civic Center for another Fight for 15 rally. We're going to try to pressure the city council to pinch. That obviously do something about it.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for calling in, man. Thanks for sharing us too. I know you share us on Twitter, man. Thanks a lot. And
thank you.
I guess we'll see you guys on Wednesday. Me and DB live in the studio. And bookmark the UCY link and check them out daily. Thank you guys.
Oh.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.